Coming up, my favorite new way to carry a Swiss Army knife. I get a brand new Microtech. And full circle, from commander to amphibian. 25 years of collecting knives in 12 folders. I'm Bob DeMarco. This is the Knife Junkie Podcast.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your host, Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Welcome back to the show. I had two favorite comments from this past week, per usual. First one was from Lundy's Den 6781. He or she says, FYI, New York State is a 4-inch blade length state, and now folks in the city can carry. Switchblades are also legal to own and carry during hunting or fishing. Pass it around. Lundy, considered it passed. This is great. I'm glad you commented on this. I've frequently over the years have badmouthed New York State, especially New York City, about their knife laws, but it's good to hear that things are changing. We talk about knife laws a lot here on with knife rights, and that is something I don't remember. So it's good to hear. Consider it passed around. And man, 4 inches, that's the perfect blade length. So things are looking up in New York State. Next up, from Fried Pie MC5YT, he says, I get to carry a Bowie knife every day, living the dream. And I got to say, Fried, I'm living vicariously through you. I guess legally I could do the same, but I'm in the midst of a pearl clutching society here, so it would be difficult to get away with it. Fried, I admire you. And I admire all of you who watched the show and comment. Thank you so much for watching and for commenting, paying attention, and liking and all of that. We just hit 5 million views last week, and that's more than some and fewer than others. But to me, I think that's an incredible number. 5 million of anything is pretty cool. So especially dollars. But it hasn't translated that way. It will at some point. But thank you so much for watching. I really, really appreciate it. Okay, all that yammering over with. Let us now get to a pocket check.
What's in his pocket? Let's find out. Here's the Knife Junkie with his pocket check of knives.
In my pocket, front right today, was the Emerson Knives TKF1. I've been carrying this one a lot since I traded my buddy Ian for it. And I'm really, really loving it. This is my first new Emerson in quite some time. Emerson is one of the brands that I have decided I am never selling. Ever since Joe, remember him? Joe the Knife Whisperer? He was here for a flash. Well, he made off with two of my Emersons, and I'm not sure what he fenced them for and bought. I have a pretty good idea. But anyway, I kind of vowed in that moment never to get rid of any of my Emersons. And, I hadn't really acquired any since. So this was a really nice trade opportunity that came up with my friend. And all he wanted for it was my old OS 8 fully serrated 6-inch cold steel holdout, because a guy that trains him uses those and has used them in the past to great effect. So he really wanted that back in his lineup. And I said, look, man, you can get one S35DN. You don't need mine. He's like, let's just trade. I don't feel like. So we traded, and of course I threw in a Night Horse to make it more worth his while. But still, I made out on the deal, and I gotta say, I love this knife. 4 inches, Tim Kennedy is a renowned Green Beret. He's been on every podcast you know and love, and he was also an MMA fighter, saw some nominal success in the UFC, but he's just basically a professional badass, seems like a great guy too. He approached Ernest Emerson to have a knife designed. He wanted something long, thin, and stabby. And of course, Ernest Emerson loves Bowie knives and clip points. And so he created this long, slender, kind of reminds me a little bit of a Hell's Bells style knife here, Bowie knife. And so there you go. Long, slender, V-ground, and of course, chisel edge as usual. Wickedly sharp. Chisel edges are, and I've actually used this one. I've been carrying it a lot. I've used it on cardboard and stuff. I used to think, oh, this tracks weird through the material. it takes like one micro adjustment the very first time you use it. If you're not used to a chisel edge, what you got to get used to with the chisel edge is extreme sharpness. Just imagine a V ground edge and then half of it really sharp. Okay. So next up on me, my slip joint today was the Feel Good Jack from Jack Wolf Knives. Been carrying around the new release a lot, least recently, the Midnight Jack, which is also a sheep's foot. And so I decided to go back in time a few months and carry this one. That sheep's foot blade there is nice and acute, you know, comes to a nice pointy point there. And this one has that fat carbon and blue Arctic. I can never keep it straight, but it's one of the blue carbon fibers. Really nice and stupendous action on this. Of course, this is called the Feel Good Jack, like Dr. Feel Good, like the Motley Crue album and song. And this is a doctor's knife. So that means the spine and the bottom part of the handle are about parallel. It comes to a flat bottom where on an old school doctor back in the day using his doctor's knife would crush up pills with that flat bottom, use the blade to cut the pills up, use the bottom to crush them. And then there was usually a secondary tool in here, and it was like a bit of a long spatula, and you fold that out and you use that to stir up the little tincture, the little snake oil you made for the guy. I love Western medicine. Don't get me wrong. Nothing better than Western medicine, especially for trauma. But it all started somewhere. And, part of that was doctors making house calls and, carrying doctor's knives. So today was the Feel Good Jack. Oh, and by the way, Here's to the doctors. Here's to the doctors saving our butts. They're like cops. People like to complain, cops and lawyers. People like to complain about them until they need them, you know, and then they're grateful. So, all right. Next up in the waistband was this beauty. This was the knife I was really seeking at Blade Show 2023. I really wanted a push dagger, custom push dagger, and, saw a few. But this one really rang my bell. This is the Stroop Knives SD1. And, a couple of things I really love about this knife. I have decided that push daggers for me personally are better when they're asymmetrically handled, meaning, the blade is not protruding between the middle finger and the ring finger, but between the middle finger and the forefinger. Because to me, it's easier. It's just a little bit easier for me to know where that tip is the closer it is to where I'm used to carrying a knife, basically. It feels like I'm more in control here. Here, this is more caveman. I think I might get more power coming straight up the arm this way. But this way, I don't think I'm really losing any of that rigidity or power. And I feel like I have a better way of knowing where the tip is. Okay, now that we've established that, this is totally chisel ground, meaning totally flat on that side. And then when you flip it, that's where the grind is. And you can see that that's a pretty steep grind. And the edge grinds are pretty steep. So not necessarily for cutting, but you can do some wicked slashing with it. You're definitely going to cut and split the skin with that. But where this thing really shines is on the push. So that flat bit on the bottom and then that peaked bit on the top make for a nasty, almost triangular wound. And it goes in shockingly easily. Now, what it goes into is cardboard shockingly easily. It's all I've stabbed with this. But every time I pull this out, I kind of have this intuition, this gut feeling like it's not very sharp because it's not slicey. But damn, it is sharp, and this thing will penetrate all day long. So this is what I carried in the waistband, and how I do carry it is with this sheath, this monoblock here from Discreet Carry Concepts. The sheath itself is in the waistband, and the clip goes over my pants, and then my belt goes over that. So it's attached to my waistband of my pants, but not over the belt. I don't like that. It makes things too rigid because I need to move things around, you know, as I'm sitting down and stuff. I need to move that sheath around. And if it's locked over the belt, it's not going anywhere. But on the pants, you have some wiggle room. Lastly, for emotional support, was my very coveted XL Recon 1. I say very coveted. Every time I show this, someone offers to buy it because they're discontinued and they're very desirable. I got this. This is an XHP. Both of my XL Recon 1s are an XHP. They did a very brief stint with S35EN before they discontinued them. Quote me on that. But anyway, the XHP is even more coveted, and I managed to snag one of these and also one of the Tontos, different from different people at different times, but shortly after they were discontinued. Interesting thing is the coating on the Tonto is shiny. So you get two different kind of finishes on these knives, depending on which blade you got. I don't know why they discontinued these. It's kind of ridiculous. I guess they weren't selling, but everyone seems to want them. And people love the large blades. One of the general rules for emotional support knives is fidgetiness. People think that these are not fidgety. I beg to differ. This one is a little tighter, but every Demco designed cold steel has a ricasso long enough to, if you put a finger forward in that choil and drop it, it's not going to cut you. So you can totally fidget with these. I'm way better with it when I haven't rolled my wrist. I rolled my wrist on my new Bob dummy punching bag yesterday. So tape your wrists. That's what I had on me today. A pretty wicked lineup, if I do say so myself, with the TKF1 from Emerson Knives, the Dr. Feelgood Jack from Jack Wolf Knives, the SD1 from Stroop Knives, and the Recon 1 XL clip point blade from Cold Steel. Let me know what you were carrying today. Always fun to find out what you junkies out there are hefting and carrying about. Some of you carry up to 10 knives a day, which I applaud. I usually have about 10 knives on me a day, but I'm also counting the knives I carry in my EDC backpack. So, are you? Tell me how many knives you carry too. Thank you one and all for watching. As I said before, 5 million views is really, really exciting. My favorite way to carry a Swiss Army knife these days is not new, but it's new to me. And it's with these danglers here, dangler clips. Do you guys know about these? You know, like, yeah, you're the last to know, Bob, as usual. But check these out, man. It clips right on the top of your pants pocket, just like a regular knife clip, but it's not fixed rigidly to the Swiss Army knife. So that's the thing I don't like. I've seen a lot of people, a lot of cool aftermarket mods that people do on Victorinox knives, and not poo-pooing anyone's efforts, but I've just never resonated with a clip on anything this small. I don't like it. I've had situations where they've kind of popped out when sitting down. I've always sort of hesitated with that. But I also don't like to just drop a Swiss Army knife in the bottom of my pocket and have it rattle around. Also, they tend to be too thick to fit into any of my leather slips. So it's kind of like they've always been relinquished to bag knives or desk knives or just like go and grab it, but not carry it. This has totally resolved that because now it hangs north to south in my pocket. It's not making contact with anything else in the pocket. And Swiss Army knives are relatively light, so I almost forget it's there. So I got a 2-pack for $7.50 on Amazon, and I think I'm going to get some more and put them on my knives. I think I'd be more apt to carry them. This one is the other one I'm excited to now be carrying a lot because I love this thing. This is the Pioneer X. So it's a regular Pioneer with the large blade, the awl, and then the typical opening side, your can opener and bottle opener here. But in the center, it has the scissors, which makes it the X. It's always hard to get these out without nails. All right, now I have to since I started. All right, you know what Swiss Army knife scissors look like. Okay, so the Pioneer X, what a great, great knife to have on you because of those scissors and then everything else it has. But it won't be great if it's not on you. What good is it? So there, that clip. All I'm trying to say is check out those clips. They're really cool, and it really might transform how you carry, or even if you carry, a Swiss Army knife, which I got to say, of everything I carry, is probably the most useful, because luckily I'm not getting in knife fights. All right, still to come on the Knife Junkie Podcast, we're going to take a look at some new knives and a knife story in the news. But first, I want to say, like, comment, and subscribe. Hit the notification bell. That lets you know when something new comes up. But just know something pretty much comes up every day in the form of a short, a close-up video, the Wednesday supplemental, the Thursday night knives, the Sunday hour-long interview. So there's the schedule. But hit the notification bell, and then also share the show. That really, really helps. Help turn a friend of yours into the good kind of junkie, the knife junkie. All right, coming up, Life Knife News.
Among this week's specials at Knives Ship Free, the Spyderco Stretch 2 XL Lightweight is praised for its lightness and big slicey blade. Spyderco's lockback gives it a sturdy lockup, and the clip has four positions available for any carrying preference. The Benchmade Tagged Out features a 3.5-inch CPM 154 blade with a wicked 14-degree sharpening angle for incredible slicing performance. The handle's nested steel liners and high-vis orange grivery scales bring the total weight to just 2.1 ounces, and the RMJ Tactical executes this heavy-duty kukri using 80CR V2 tool steel. The aggressive blade angle is combined with an ergonomic handle and textured G10 scales for a secure grip. Get these deals and other great specials from our friends at Knives Ship Free. Just use our affiliate link, theknifejunkie.com/knivesshipfree. That's theknifejunkie.com/knivesshipfree. Support the show and get a great new knife at the same time. theknifejunkie.com/knivesshipfree.
You're listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast, and now here's the Knife Junkie with the Knife Life News.
To quote one of my favorite journalists from today, Ben Schwartz of Knife News, we are in a golden age of box cutters. And Ben, I would have to agree with you. We are indeed in a golden age of box cutters. Funny thing, and just like flashlights, though I appreciate the utility and even the artistry in some of the box cutters that are coming out from custom makers and manufacturers alike, they just don't ignite the fire in my belly, but they're cool. This one, though, just might be an exception. It's the Boker Kalashnikov box cutter. So you know the Boker Kalashnikov line. That is probably the second most famous line in Boker's lineup, or the most reiterated line. How cool is it that they put a box cutter in there? So that's the reusable, swappable, trapezoidal blades. And then right behind the swappable blade, looks like it's three little screws there that hold it in. Then there's a little one of those curved cord cutting blades. That's kind of cool. So I think it's nice. It's exciting to me. It's nice, you know. Box cutters, if that's your thing, and if you're using them for work, why not dress it up? Why not impress your friends in the stock room? That's pretty cool. I'm just surprised that Boker hasn't figured out how to make a Burnley Boker Quaken box cutter, because they have figured out how to make that into everything else. Maybe for that, it could be a swappable scalpel blade, because it's nice and slender. You couldn't fit one of those larger blades in it. So that is available now. You need a box cutter, you want a switch blade, go get the Boker Kalashnikov box cutter. Okay, next up, Civivi has a new one. This is a production version of a custom knife by Rafal Brzeski, BRR Knives. That's how I know him on Instagram. And this is the Kwai Q, or Kwai Q. Kwai Q. Kwai Q, because it's a Quaken. You see, it's a Quaken, but it has an Americanized Tanto blade. So where we see the upsweep from the belly to the tip, you know, from the ricasso to the tip on a normal Quaken, uninterrupted. This is interrupted by a slight secondary point, making it more of an Americanized Tanto. Hollow ground Nitro V blade, 3 inches. An inline flipper tab, which is pretty cool. It hides itself once it's open. And then that incredibly neutral handle with the two-tone black and orange pattern G10. Remarkably light at 2.11 ounces and reversible deep carry pocket clip. They say this one will be available in March. Pretty cool. If you like the design, you know Civivi will make it just right for you. So do keep your eye out for that. Another one that's available now that I saw through Knife Magazine, my other favorite knife periodical, is the Bark River Knives Hudson Bay Trade Knife. And this thing is really cool. So just a quick little update on what a trade knife is. These are knives that were used commonly by fur traders in the 1800s, the 1800s in Canada, North and Northern United States, in the pioneer mountain man days, as it's said. Work knives were ubiquitous. Some people would carry axes too, but everyone had a big work knife. And they tended towards either the 10-inch butcher knife or the 5-inch upswept blade or something like this, the roach belly. So this, you've heard the name roach belly before. Cold Steel has that very inexpensive roach belly knife. I keep one in the car. I love that knife. Sort of a scalper design. This here, this Bark River Knives version of it, has a continuous belly from ricasso to tip, is A1 tool steel, and is based on a design from the 1700s, something very popular in the 1700s. So this, or starting in the 1700s, used all throughout the 1800s. But as you can see through that big belly, this would be excellent for that fur trade, the needs of the fur trade. You're constantly skinning animals. Well, you're going to want a hefty, large size, continual belly style knife. So at 5.5 inches, I don't know if I'd call it large size, but I think for skinning, that's a pretty decent size. Leather sheath. And, if you read this article, at Knife News, you'll see that an experienced woodsman, trapper, and hunter, used this to great aplomb skinning some animals. So if that's your thing, or if you're a hunter, definitely check that out. I just like the history of the trade knives. I think it's cool. And, you know, I love my Condor Hudson Bay knife. So this one definitely, perked up my ear. All right. Last in Knife Life News, an article, that I also got from Knife Magazine. Knife Magazine on the weekends is great. There's a lot of, there's an open thread with lots of cool, links to great knife articles and reviews and videos. He recently linked to our Bob Terzuola interview, but also quirky news stories that you see here every now and again. This one is, I title it, Arizona Man Arrested Gallivanting Through Neighborhood with Sword, and I'm going to read through the article. It says, Glendale, Arizona. A man was arrested after he was seen carrying a sword in a Glendale neighborhood. An officer spotted the man at about 11:20 p.m. on February 15th. Near 51st Street and Ocotillo Road. Police say he matched the description of a person who fled from a traffic stop near Grand and 55th Avenues. Once the officer came into contact with the man, he saw he was carrying a large sword, which turned out to be real. Once the subject was identified, he was found to have an outstanding felony warrant for his arrest out of Pinal County, quote-unquote, Glendale police said. During the records check of said subject, it was learned he was a prohibited possessor, therefore restricted from, quote, possessing a deadly or prohibited weapon, unquote. And, you know, that's just a quirky little news story. But what I like is that in this article, Doug Ritter chimed in, our great knife rights magnate. He says, as Doug Ritter, a resident of Arizona, made a point of saying, carrying a sword in and of itself is not illegal in Arizona. Mic drop. However, it has also led to a series of texts involving a sword-wielding U of A frat boy dressed as the Bud Knight riding horses through Tucson. So, quirky little news story, but I love that it just so happens that Doug Ritter saw the story and was just like, by the way, not illegal to carry a sword in Arizona. In and of itself, Now, if you're a scumbag and, you know, you're wanted, well, maybe it's not a prudent decision. All right. That's it for Knife Life News this week. I want to say, be sure to join us on Patreon if you like the show and you want to help support it and you want to be enrolled in a monthly knife giveaway. That's always fun. Also, if you're interested in getting extra interview content from every interview I do, we do an extra interview afterward and get some stuff that we didn't get to in the interview itself. And we give that out to patrons, whether you're a gentleman junkie at $10 a month or a traditional junkie at $3, you still get that exclusive. So check it out. Just go to theknifejunkie.com/Patreon or scan the QR code on the screen. Again, that's theknifejunkie.com/Patreon.
The Shockwave Tactical Torch is your ultimate self-defense companion. Featuring a powerful LED bulb that lasts 100,000 hours, a super sharp crenulated bezel, and built-in stun gun delivering 4.5 million volts. Don't settle for ordinary. Choose the Shockwave Tactical Torch. TheKnifeJunkie.com/Shockwave.
And now that we're caught up with Knife Life News, let's hear more of the Knife Junkie podcast.
So when I told you the title of today's main topic of conversation, which is coming up after the state of the collection, I did a little foreshadowing because I'm a very literary guy. And you may know what this new Microtech is that I got in my collection, if you were paying attention to the title. But anyway, I finally got this beautiful, beautiful model of Microtech. I've been talking about it for a long time, and I've saved up for it. And here it is. This is the Microtech Amphibian, and I am bonkers about this knife. Now, recently I've been carrying the SOCOM Bravo 1 made by Reich Knives a lot. I've had a sort of reinvigoration of love for this thing. I loved it when it first came out, and then I couldn't get it, and then I sought it out, but sort of lost interest, but still wanted it, got it, didn't carry it. Now I'm so into it, and that's what led to this. Because I think I need more Microtech in my life, though I don't really need more out the front in my life, I have decided. But I do hear that they're coming out with a no wiggle out the front. But anyway, I'm just astounded by their designs and their builds. Their builds are really, really exquisite. Whether it's the Ultratech that I have or the SOCOM Elite, or this SOCOM Bravo made by Reich, or now this. They are just incredibly built. This one is a fluted G10. They also make this with a fluted aluminum handle. And I believe there's no difference in cost between the aluminum and the G10. But really nicely machined. And the G10 is nice and light, but the balance is still where you want it, right by the pivot, right at the finger choil. Whereas the SOCOM Elite, a knife that I love so much, is a little bit blade heavier right in front of the Ricasso, which works better for a larger fighting knife. This one is balanced absolutely perfectly. And with the aluminum handle, it's going to be a little bit handle heavy, like the aluminum stitch I showed off not too long ago. Not mine. So the G10 strikes the perfect balance between, you know, the length of it and the weight of the G10 allows it to balance out that big long 4-inch blade just perfectly. Also, what helps balance it is the ram lock. So the ram lock works a lot like a axis style bar lock, where you pull back a tab, in this case a tab much like the actuation tabs on there out the front, where you pull that back to release this big block. Instead of a pin attached on both sides to an Omega spring, which is what we see in a regular axis lock, here we get a coil spring on a pin that goes into this big block with a tab on the end that locks into a notch on the tab. So similar concept, just way beefier. And the fact that it's going against one coil spring instead of two springs on either side you know, when you have those two springs on either side, you do run the risk if the tolerances aren't right. It makes it difficult, basically, to pull it with one finger, whether it's the thumb or the forefinger. This one, with that big block and the long tab, really makes it easy to actuate it with just the thumb. I've never found that easy to do with regular Axis style locks. So instinctively, I go for the two-finger thing anyway. But since I just tweaked my wrist, I've been using just the thumb because it's more comfortable. This knife I could go on for days about. I won't here, but I'm going to do a close-up. But I'm astounded by how awesome this is. So M390 MK, is that what they call it? Yeah, M390 MK, which is the proprietary M390. That they make for Microtech. This one has the serrations, and I'm really happy. This is one of the few knives where I have a bunch of serrations on my Microtechs. I like their serrations a lot, and on the inner side of a recurve, I just love it. It accentuates the recurve. It really shows off the recurve, but it also just adds such cutting power to an already powerful spot on the blade. So I just love that. And it looks mean. That huge swedge, this thing reminds me a bit of the Emerson Commander. That's what inspired the whole main topic of conversation today. So we'll get to that in a minute. But nice big hardware. In this case, since it's not deep carry, the big hardware, these giant screws don't stick in my craw. With the loop over, a deep carry pocket clip on the stitch with these giant screws, it's like, you know, they hate your pants. Jimping here, all of this grip. This is just a great, great knife. Saber grip is really comfortable. And then there's a swale there with some jimping for the thumb if you're up in Filipino grip, which is awesome. And then even a little bit of blank space here if you have to come up to use the tip for something delicate. So lots of different ways to hold this knife. And then something that I absolutely love, and I wish every knife would do this, especially one that is tactical in nature, but jimping on the butt, jimping on the pommel there, that really grips the thumb when you're in reverse grip. When you're in reverse grip and you're going to pound this into something like a 55-gallon oil drum full of Uzis at the border, that's the border of Zangaro, by the way. You got to have jimping there because you don't want your thumb to slip off the back. This is so perfect. And then the shape of it, that peak, your thumb really wraps around it. It is perfect. I love this knife. I'm in love with it. It makes me want to buy a whole bunch of Microtech. This is one of those knives that this hasn't happened in a while. One of those knives I receive and I'm like, I'm going to get rid of everything else and just collect Microtechs, except for my Emersons and my Cold Steels and my Spyderco's. But I'm like, what are the frivolous knives I can get rid of so I can get more Microtechs? Because they are very impressive. They really are built like those proverbial tanks, but they're more stylish than tanks. It's like Hinderer meeting Bastinelli or something. I don't know. I just love it. And I'm going to stop right there. Next knife I got, I feel the same way about. Except this is a custom knife. This is a Jed Hornbeek. Just had him on the show. Jed Hornbeek Necromance. And this is one of those knives that I like all of his knives. And some of them I love. But this one is one of those knives I saw. I was like, I swear I designed that in a dream, or I wish I designed it. This is a fighter. This is an EDC fighter. And it is EDC-able. It's on the heavy and large side, for EDC for me, but, I carried it all yesterday, on the right. This is not an appendix carry for me. This is definitely a 3 o'clock in the waistband, carry. But what is it? It is a 3V, machined 3V fighter. And when I say fighter, how I define a fighting knife is a double-edged blade, but asymmetrically double-edged, not a dagger. But something like this, for instance, which has a sort of Americanized Tanto blade, the more I look at it, because even though it is so sharp, I can barely touch it. But So that is a definite change in angle there, but not enough to call it a sub point, but is reminiscent of a Tonto. And then up here, Scandi ground edge. So this is an incredible knife for fighting. 4 3/4 inches. There's his logo, which is a cool sort of bird. It looks like a plague doctor mask, bird skull. And then a fuller. This thing is so sharp. And look at the jimping up there. And this acts as a sub hilt. This is practically a sub hilt. Oh, God. And it just fits in the hand so perfectly. Feels really astoundingly good in this saber grip. Filipino grip is great because he put that jimping up there and that flat spot. So that's sort of a bayonet grind. And it's great in reverse grip. Same thing. He's got that peak there. I wouldn't mind the jimping on the end, but not a deal breaker for sure. Whoops. Great peak to cap the thumb or cap the pommel with the thumb. Hollow ground. I'm going to do a close up of this so I will not wax too poetic for too long, but I'm just in love with this knife. Thank you, Jed Hornbeek. He sent this to me and said, pay for it when you can. And, you know, I scratched together the fundage and gave it to him, but he sent it to me like, you know, in good faith. And I thought that was awesome. So thank you very much. And thank you for making such cool knives. And thank you, Jim, for making such cool t-shirts. I got to show you the featured t-shirt of the week. Leap year, just another day to buy knives. That's right. This is leap year. So we're going to have a February 29th. And you know what that means. I know you know what that means. That means that's the eighth birthday, the eighth anniversary of the birth of my Sabenza, which was born on leap year, or leap day, 2016. So just another day to buy knives, February 29th. Just another day to buy cool merch from theknifejunkie.com/shop, like this t-shirt or like about 50 others. Jim goes on these creative tears, not just in the look of the show. You see the look of the show change from time to time. Comes up great visual motifs, but he's also designing t-shirts all the time. And we've got a bunch of them. If you like knife-themed t-shirts, go to theknifejunkie.com/shop and check them out. All right, let's get today's main topic. I'm calling it Full Circle. From commander to amphibian, 25 years of collecting knives in 12 folders. Oh my God. 25 years. Okay. So I've been collecting knives longer than that, but the paradigm shifted for me about 25 years ago when I bought my Emerson Commander in 1999. I bought it then, but the model year is a 2000 and it showed up, much longer after, putting in that order. So these 12 knives I'm going to show you are milestone knives, for one reason or another and stick out. I have a lot of them. I have a lot of knives that I'm like, oh, and this was my first this and that was my, but these are the 12 that are the most elemental in my collection of folders, modern locking folders. Almost all locking. All right. First up, as I mentioned, is the Emerson Commander. And this is a classic version of it being from 2000. You can see differences all over. First of all, it's thinner. It has a backspacer instead of standoffs. It's got the double detent that went away somewhere around 2016. But that means there's a detent there. You can see it, right there, where my tip of my finger is. And then the other main detent is on the liner lock. The construction is different in that all of the structural screws are under this piece of G10, which is also kind of old and actually seems more like micarta to me, but I'm pretty sure it's G10. And then the blade has changed a little bit, but this is that knife. I saw this. I couldn't believe it. I had just gotten into Filipino martial arts. I'd been collecting knives. I had Furies and some cheap everyday carry kind of things. But I had just gotten into Filipino martial arts, fell in love with their swords and the idea of the recurve. I had had a Kukri since I was a kid. My parents went to India. They got me a Kukri in Nepal. So I was always aware of that shape. But to see it come together in something a little less extreme than a kukri in these Filipino blades with their recurves and their downward. When I saw this, I was gobsmacked. And then later found out that Ernest Emerson had a rich history of knife combatives training, including a lot of Filipino kali. This knife just became something I had to have, and it was way out of my price range. I mean, as a freelance producer living in New York City, you know, with three roommates and like just trying to scrape by, buying a $200 knife, that's how much this was even back then, was way out of the question, but I still went for it because I had a credit card, and hey, what is credit for? I don't know. I thought it was for buying Emerson's. So I bought this, and when I bought it, I didn't realize it was basically like a pre-order, and I got it from KnifeCenter.com. They sent it to me a year later. It popped up on my desk at work. I was like, what is this? I had forgotten about it. I thought I'd get it immediately, and I didn't, and then here it arrived, and I carried this for – this was my main carry for years, this – probably about 3 years until the next one popped up. But I love the recurve and I love the wave. And I was really, really intense in the sort of early part of my Filipino martial arts training. And carrying this, I thought I was indestructible. I was lapu-lapu walking around with this thing. I was indestructible. And check this out. This is the Emerson logo as it was then. I have that logo on a sticker on my car because I just think it's cool. All right. So this started everything. I'm going to put this over here. Mind you, I still had knives. I was still carrying knives. But that is when I turned the corner. And then, you know, as cold steel, I was always into cold steel, fixed blades. But the folders were lagging behind until they started coming out with knives like this. And, this was the next big game changer for me, the El Hombre. As you can see, again, I went for the deep recurve, the dramatic recurve. But this knife, which was designed after the Yatagan, the Turkish bladed, the Turkish knife, but it was called the El Hombre. And to me, it reminded me of, and so this is the Yatagan, but also, some Spanish and Mexican knives. Obviously, the Navaja influence was there. And to me, I was like, it's not an exact Navaja, but I had no idea what a Yatagan was at the time and didn't put that together. But the dramatic recurve with the point right in the middle. So you can still stab with it. It's not like the point is facing down. You can still thrust with it accurately. And yet you have this incredible amount of belly and incredibly deep recurve. And at the time, you could only get this one in serrations. And I wasn't crazy about the serrations at the time, actually. I'm way more into them now. But old school jimping on the spine, you saw this on a couple of other knives, like the Culloden, the fixed blade Culloden. This was pre-jimping craze in knives, but you see that cool file work on the back acted as jimping. This one is permanently stained. What kind of steel is this? I don't even know. Permanently stained right up here. It's kind of hard to see. But I went on a camping trip with a girl once, and we got some tofu lin, baked tofu, which I was a vegetarian at the time, and cut it with that. I was a vegan at the time, actually. Cut it with this, and it stained the knife. So tofu, bad, stains knives. I still like tofu. And I was hopefully not the only vegan with a wicked and growing knife collection at the time. The only vegan who was EDCing this knife for self-defense, hopefully. Okay, next up. Now this one is, it was quite a time between that cold steel and this cold steel, but there was, kind of like the Dark Ages, where no one was learning anything new for 1,000 years. This was kind of, there was a period of time where I wasn't able to afford knives. And if I could, I was getting fixed blade knives like the SOG Super Bowie, or the Laredo Bowie from Cold Steel. Those were the kind of knives I was getting at that time, not too many folders. And then this came along. course, I got other things in the meantime, but as far as game changers, this came along. To me, G10 was somewhat new, and to have a full G10 slabbed handle, full G10 on both sides, but also without an internal frame that you couldn't squeeze, without internal liners that you couldn't squeeze, it was a miracle to me. And I was like, I had this FRN here, a lot of FRN in my life. And this was a nice change because it was G10 that was now coming into reach for me. This knife at the time, the Recon 1 with the OS 8 blade steel. Yes, I stripped off the paint like coating they had on it to reveal this beautiful stone wash. And I added my own sharpening choil. This was new because the material aspect of it, like that handle and that blade shape, and the robustness of it, but also the thinness of it, because I was getting the I had the Voyagers and stuff, and everything was thick, and this was starting to thin things out. Hollow ground blade, and also a blade that I did my own tweaking to. You know, this was the first knife I did cut my own sharpening choil into, and I stripped that coating with something called aircraft stripper, and carried this nonstop for a good long while. So this was a game changer for me because it was a 4-inch robust cold steel cool knife with awesome G10 handle scales, but did not absolutely break the bank. Though at the time I got this, $60, $75 knives was not nothing. You know, we had a brand new child, and we had a lot of stuff to pay for. Not that we don't have a lot of stuff to pay for, but you will know this as you reach your older years. You know, I'm in my 50s now, and you accumulate over time. You accumulate. And no, I'm not a boomer, and I didn't buy my house for $30,000, but you do accumulate. So trust me, I know if you're younger, it seems impossible, but it's not. It's not. It's just time and tide. And also, good partnerships in life help, like my partnership with my wife, my partnership with Jim, and having some good friends around always helps. Okay, sorry for the philosophy. Let's get to the next one. Now, this next one I saw and I was like, oh, I swear I designed that knife. I know I designed that knife. I didn't, but it I swear it appears in my sketchbook numerous places. Based on Filipino swords, perfect for fighting. Perfect for Filipino martial arts. And that's what I thought when I saw this. $174. Oh my gosh. So this knife, the Spyderco Uliza, was a big game changer for me, because not only is it astoundingly beautiful to me, some people might not like the way it looks, but to me it was beautiful, and it has a blade and an overall arc that really fit my aesthetic at the time, and still does, because of that recurve, because of that Filipino blade style to me. But then knowing the lineage of it, it's one of the Spyderco Taiwanese made knives, which are the best in my opinion, or at least for the back locks, they are the best for sure. And some of the frame locks. I love their Taiwanese made knives. But also, it was the first knife that was, I mean, this was expensive, $174. I remember the number. and the problem was, is I bought this on a credit card because I had to have it. And I had seen some things that I had to have get discontinued. And I panicked and I bought it. And then I hid that from my wife. And then, as all things, she found out. And it really turned into a thing. And then we made some rules in the house from this. And it's not like I pulled it from the family kitty. I just pulled it from nothing. I pulled it from credit. So that meant I spent a lot more than $174 on this knife. So, try and avoid bad financial decisions. Even though they're great knives and stuff, remember there's a secondary market. And that's something I learned from this. I also learned that I can't really hide stuff and shouldn't hide stuff from my wife. So sorry, dear. All right, next up is the Protech Rockeye This was a great pressure release knife. Now, this came a few years later. As I said, you accumulate more, you start earning more, you've saved more. And this was about a $190 knife when I got it originally. But the reason this was important is I was absolutely head over heels for the V-Sep, the Les George V-Sep, which was his mid-tech version of his custom Rockeye. And all of them look like this. They all have this profile. And I just fell in love with it. For years, I was in love with this knife. When it first came out, people were calling it the Sebenza killer. And it didn't kill the Sebenza, but it really, really launched Les George to the fore and gave him some serious street cred as a designer. And then being picked up by ProTec and bringing that V-Sep, that $500 knife, or if you wanted the custom Rockeye, I'm sure $1,000 knife, into reach, that was ProTec doing this. So even though at the time I couldn't buy this and send it to my state, the knife companies didn't really know. And so I bought this and it was my first real automatic, or I should say non-tourist piece from Europe style automatic. And my first D2 blade steel, I think, CPM D2, and gave me a lot here. It gave me that custom Les George design that I loved. And it also showed me that automatic knives are cool, and you can get them. You can get them sent to you. So they're fully legal in every way, even to carry concealed in my state, thanks to Doug Ritter of Knife Rights. So the ProTec Rockeye automatic, big, big game changer for me. Next up, this was, I remember very, very specifically saying, this is the best knife in my collection. And that is the Zero Tolerance 0452 CF. The beautiful design by Dmitry Sinkovich, the Belarusian designer. I'm going to move these knives because my camera keeps trying to focus on them. And I know they're a beautiful camera, but we're not talking about them now. They had their time in the sun. They had their close up. Okay. Let's do this. All right. That's better. So this is the Zero Tolerance 0452 CF designed by Dmitry Sinkovich, who is one of my favorite folder designers. I pay attention to his Instagram feed and it is always beautiful. It's always graceful. And sometimes it's long, thin, svelte grace like this one. And sometimes it's this weird, chubby, bulbous grace, which is also beautiful. He's got a great design. Eye or hand or whatever you want to say. And he also custom builds them and then has them made and licensed by others. These are out of print with Zero Tolerance, but to me, this represents the golden age of Zero Tolerance. To me, this is the lightest duty I want to go with a Zero Tolerance, and this ain't light duty. But the other Sinkovich, the 460, I had the upswept Persian blade. That one felt a little too light to me. But this one has that great titanium frame lock. It's just stonewashed and gorgeous to look at. It came with a really cheesy off-the-shelf ZT. It's actually a Kershaw clip that they just painted ZT on. So I got this aftermarket. I think this is an MXG gear clip. The one thing I'm not crazy about, the carbon fiber, it's okay. I would rather my Carta, but never have gotten around to doing that. And then just a gorgeous bayonet ground drop point blade with that forward jimping there up on the handle. So for quite a while, this was my classiest, most expensive, most like incredible action knife in my collection and the pride of my folders. Next up, the SOCOM Elite. This one you always see every time I go on road trips. I bring this out and talk about it. I carry it other times. It's great for khaki pants carry because of that clip. Really allows you to carry this in angled pockets very easily. But this was my first S35 VN knife. This was my first Microtech knife. And this is the Tonto model year I love the best. I don't know how many years they were doing that particular grind, but this is a 2013, did I say? 2012, made in March 2012. So this is 11 years old now. And that is my favorite iteration of the SOCOM Tonto in that great aluminum with the carbon fiber inlays. This was also my first knife with a glass breaker and my first knife, unbeknownst to me, with bearings. I didn't know why this was so smooth when I got it. I just thought it was ridiculously smooth. But bearings weren't really being talked about, so I didn't really know. But, yep, so this is a big milestone knife, too. This next one is the only one that's not a modern locking folder. I have to represent my slip joint folding obsession, and that can all be encapsulated in this exact knife. This is my number 15, Great Eastern Cutlery, number 15 boy's knife. And this was the farmer's knife because it has a spay blade as a secondary. Full spay blade and, of course, that gorgeous clip point blade. This knife was the first, not the first Great Eastern Cutlery, but the first one that really got me to fall in love with slip joints in general for a new reason, not just the old reason, like I've had them for a long time and those were the first knives I ever had, but the beauty that you can get out of them. First of all, these are made on the old machines, old patterns, in old ways with old materials. But this one in particular, the die job on this, these handle covers really, I can't really explain in words what they do to me, but they're beautiful. They're absolutely stunning. And so I went about trying to collect as many of these, this autumn jig bone as I could from them, but, and I have a number of them, but none of them reach that. And that might not mean much to you, but looking at this die job, just especially right here on that side, the pole side, what do they call this? Whatever this other side, the off side near the bolster. It's just gorgeous. But also the action and the patina and the sharpness these things achieve. This knife in particular, if I had to get rid of all of my other slip joints, not including the sentimental ones like my grandpa gave me, this would be the one that I would save. This one right here. Great Eastern Cutlery, number 15. Okay, next up is arguably still my favorite folder in my collection, though that's quite a lofty title to try and imbue. But this one here is the XM24 by Rick Hinderer Knives. The 24 is the larger version of the XM. And as I am fond of saying, because I think it makes me sound profound, but I believe that the XM24 and that 4-inch blade length really allows the full expression of the lines for whatever the blade shape is. In other words, I think that this Warncliffe looks better than the 3.5-inch Warncliffe. I think my 4-inch buoy on the XM24 looks better than the 3.5-inch on the 20, on the 18. So I just, it's the same with cars. You see that with cars. Like, the longer the car, the better the lines, the better they have more sort of room to express themselves without having to jam all the ideas, all the graceful ideas in a smaller spot. I don't know. But this one is before the tri-way pivot. So it's on the Nylatron washers, but it acts like it's on bearings. When you open it, it acts like it's on bearings because it flips without hesitation. But then when you close it, you get that nice hydraulic feel of washers. And then I'm going to come to the mic for this because it's a great sounding knife. When you close it, listen to this. Bing. And it's just that M390 and that titanium and the, and everything interacting in there. It's just an incredible, incredible knife. So, to me, this one was very hard to find and this was one of those ones I had to jump on in the moment. But it's also one that I saved up for because this is a $500 knife, or at the time it was a $575 knife. Now who knows what they cost? But yeah, this one was big. and is and remains so. All right. Almost done here, but this one is the Riot K2. And the Riot K2 did a couple of things for me. This is a landmark knife because it really got me to love and appreciate a hollow grind in a different way for its thin, thin, thin sliciness. I used to like hollow grinds just for how they look. This one really got me to understand that you hollow grind for a reason, not just because it looks like a razor blade, but because you get wicked thinness behind the edge, and that makes the knife a great, great slicer. This one is also my first Chinese-made, premium Chinese-made knife, and also my first fall-shut knife. So this was my first exquisite action knife, besides the SOCOM Elite. But when I got the SOCOM Elite, the action was disconcerting to me because it closed too easily, and it was not, I was not used to the bearings at the time, but this, I was looking for them. And, so this is a great, great knife and really signifies a turn towards some of the real high-end Chinese manufacturing knives, to include knives from designers that I could never afford to buy their custom knives. And so they were put within reach by Riot and other companies. Okay. This second to last one is the Spartan Harzy folder. Spartan Harzy folder, symbolic of, this one has the Knife Junkie logo on it. And this one, to me, symbolizes the project, the Knife Junkie project, which is to really talk to all of these makers, manufacturers, and reviewers that I admire. And this was symbolic of, this was symbolic of that, but this came from talking with Curtis Iovito of Spartan Blades. I already had the knife, and it took me a long time to get it. And then I finally got it. And then after speaking with him, he was such a gracious, awesome guy. He told me to send it to him, and he would have it engraved with my logo. He did that, and the little cover here for the clip. So this knife means a lot to me sentimentally, but also encapsulates my love of the tank-like tactical knives, because to me, this is a Hinderer, XM, and a Sebenza kind of blended together in terms of build and feel. So this knife had a huge impact on my collection, and also is one of those that I will never, ever get rid of. I mean, I don't plan to get rid of any of these, but that would be one of the very last. And then we're bringing it around full circle now to the Amphibian, which I showed off before, so I won't wax too poetic about, but it just shows you that my aesthetic doesn't really change too much. You know, my taste doesn't change too much. Everything with enduring, anything that endures in my collection is going to be based around something tactical, something like a fighting knife. All throughout, sprinkled throughout, you'll see Emerson knives, and I mean across time, but you will also see recurves across time. And to me, these two are so similar that it's just kind of funny that after 25 years, I'm kind of coming back to the same thing, albeit by a different maker and a different designer. So it just goes to show, the more things change, the more they stay the same. All right, thank you for joining me in this full circle from Commander to Amphibian, 25 years of collecting knives and 12 folders journey. It has been a pleasure. Actually, it really has. It was fun to go through my collection, and I had to say no to a lot of knives that meant a lot at the time, but these ones are the true milestone folders in my collection. All right, be sure to join us tomorrow night for Thursday Night Knives, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. And then join us on Sunday for a great interview. You will be glad you did. All right, for Jim working his magic behind the switcher, I'm Bob DeMarco saying, until next time, don't take dull for an answer.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at ReviewThePodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, theknifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at theknifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on theknifejunkie.com/Instagram and join our Facebook group at theknifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to bob@theknifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487, and you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.